This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
If you want to listen to this episode or any of our episodes ad-free, you can do that now. Head on over to Patreon. Click on the ad-free level. You get all of our bonus shows that you've been hearing so much about. Plus, every single day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you can listen to this episode or any of our other episodes at the same time, ad-free, over on Patreon. Welcome back to part two of our sit down with Mr. Tom Arnold. And if you haven't heard part one, you got to check it out first. We talk about when Tom met Roseanne, the beginning of their relationship, their marriage, their divorce. Tom reveals a lot of things that, I mean, he's never said before. Yeah, really, we hear all about the whole trajectory of his relationship with Roseanne, but also we hear about Roseanne. Like, what was it like on set with John Goodman and Laurie Metcalf and Sarah Gilbert? And I mean, such a talented cast. And what was that like way back then? And we just talk about it all and kind of get to where we are at now, his current dating life, which we're about to get into. We've got some housewife stuff coming to you guys, but check out part one if you want to hear about the origins of Tom and Roseanne. And now stay tuned for part two.
I do need to have a relationship eventually. I haven't had a date in over 3 years. But, you know, and I do, there are some women that are age appropriate that I see. Sometimes I do these autograph things. I'm like, there's several that I've become pals with that I'm like, yeah, let's do that. But, you know, it's also, you know, when you meet, you know, I was up at CVS talking to a school teacher. That's how far my dating goes. I go up to CVS and, you know, age appropriate. And I kind of start getting a feeling like, hey, this is that tingle a little bit. And, but I thought, there's always a beat to go, you know, I just had our next door neighbor, we had kids and I moved here to Sherman Oaks, come over and say, and we've lived here since June 1st. I brought me a thing of treats and said, I've been meaning to come over and I just wanted to say, welcome to the neighborhood. Oh God, that's so nice of you and stuff. And she goes, and you are, I go, I'm Tom Arnold. She goes, I got that. Okay. And I thought, you know, there's a little bit of, first of all, you never know what people think about you. So the dating thing, which I never did, I'm sure you dated. I never did. I went, I had four engagements up until the time I moved to LA and then four marriages. And in between those, there was a brief period of dating, like five dates in 1 week. And then I always felt I was cheating on that person. So I thought, I got to get locked into a marriage with a solid person, solid adult person that has my back. We don't always get along. We could, you know, we don't break the big rules, but has my back. And I just, I have more to work on with myself. I will say this. I have married, I have performed four marriages, all gay marriages, and they're all still married. And I have been married four times. I've been in four marriages, and none of them are working. So my brother and his husband have been together 15 years.
Wow.
And that's... you know, I see that, you know, as adults go, yeah, this is a commitment, like this is a thing, you know, because I think for a long time people grew up like, oh, I have to get married to, I have to find a woman or a man and we have to do this thing. I think people are more thoughtful now. And I can't, you know, because my kids are 8 and 6. I'm a single dad, I'm 62. So there's that. Like, first of all, people are not like, oh, I'm looking for a 62-year-old guy. You know, but there's also, I don't, to bring people around my kids,
Right.
you know, but it has to happen sometime. I'm always looking at the moms at school that have kids the same age, that are the single moms. You know, they're usually a lot younger than me, but what you do, and I've set up some play dates and talk filthy with some of the moms because they're, you know, it seems like they're in a really nice school. Seems like they'd be, but they're filthier than I could ever be. And it's really funny. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's not my number one. I'm taking it a day at a time, man. I live my life a day at a time.
Is that your go-to move, a play date for the kids?
Yeah. Well, that's the easiest one
I like
because
that.
then the kids are doing something. You know, in my mind, this is bad. But to get off the schneid, to break the streak, what needs to happen is the kids come, they're playing outside, you know, got someone kind of observing. We run in my bedroom, hook up because she wants to do that. Done. And but that's, you know, that's how my mind goes. Like, where let's get into a closet here. And I do recommend that in relationships. If you don't have sex with your mate, fucking you get resentful, you get jealous, whatever. And every week or 2 weeks or whatever, you just have to go into a closet and do some kind of sex. Get it over. It's not gonna be perfect, but just do it with that person, the one person you have sex with. Do something. And then you're like, okay, you know, chill.
I would agree with all of that. What about in Hollywood? Do you have any celebrity crushes? Like, what women in Hollywood, you know, who's your type, Tom?
Oh, Joanna Cassidy, I saw her at a couple autograph signings. She's like, and I don't know, she might be 75. I don't know. You know, I got a thing for Jane Fonda too. There's no doubt. If you spend any time with her, you know, you're like, oh yeah, that. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I am 62. I'm not like, you know, 25-year-old Tom Arnold. But you know, there is a Gail O'Grady. I like her a lot. You know, she's very beautiful, but she's also like a, you know, like a, not afraid. She'll shit talk with you. I think that you know, I think I'm more nervous around, you know, because like you do meet people at these conventions or when you're doing stand-up comedy or when you're out of the house that are fans and they're enamored with your, they like that you are who you are. And that's a, and that feels good. And then, but I always do this thing. Well, what is the next thing that happens? Because I know it's going to be more complicated than, you know, and how do I not look like I'm taking advantage of somebody?
Right.
You know, but I do find that people, this so I can speak about women a little bit, they're not as naive or you know, in the day it was sort of about this thing, and they're, because I know the moms at school, there's some that don't have time. They got time for this. Let's get it going, and then they're off and they work out. They do all this shit that I need to do, and they got this kid here, this kid here, this kid here. They're fucking badass, and they do hook up once in a while. They do that thing like for them,
They do.
and it's not a long, you know, flowery. You know, you don't have to. I don't think you have to make them promises that, listen, we will live forever. They're not interested. They're not interested in the that old game. You know, my biggest move was being able to marry people at one time. You know, to go, I will marry you. Like that seemed to be the biggest gift. Okay, I'll spend the rest of my life with you, and we will get married. We'll have a big wedding, and it'll be cool. And that just is not in the. Not that I would say I would not get married again. You know, Jim Cameron's been married 5 times. And he'd always say, you write your story. You write your ending. Fuck those people. Because, you know, he's got a great thing going on with Susie Amos, but it took him 4 other times. And, you know, I'm not looking for that. You know, I would like to meet somebody that finds me sexually attractive and is very rich. And they're very generous and they like kids. And they really think I'm amazing and amusing. And They're all set up.
What is it about Jane Fonda that you find so appealing?
Well, she's sexy. You know, she's sexy, but I've known her too because, you know, her politics, right? And she's a badass. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, Trump sent the Secret Service to my house. Nixon sent him to her house. You know, I just respect her that she's out there, you know, everything. You know, I just, you know, I respect her. I mean, Dolly Parton is very attractive. You know who was very attractive, who was very sexy, was Florence Henderson. I shit you not. Like, she was fucking A game. Like, and I've talked to other dudes about it where we tell private, I go, do you ever see any older, and people are like, fucking Florence Henderson, I met her at this thing. Like, she's a, you know, I'm going to tell you a story for your show that does not make me look like the greatest guy, but it's kind of sweet. Cloris Leachman, I did her last movie, and I loved her so much. You know, she's from Iowa. She's a brilliant actor. I respect her. I really looked out for her. In fact, Jennifer Tilly, who played my wife, filmed the moment we met. That I sat down at the dinner table, and Cloris was my mother-in-law right here, and it's very intimate. And I really looked out for her, and it was such an honor to work with her, right? And her daughter was her handler in the movie. And one night we wrapped, and then Cloris had a bedroom. We were filming in a house, so her dressing room was a bedroom, and she got to sleep on the bed. And her daughter is coming in. Her daughter is very, very nice, very cute, and she says, I just want to tell you how much it means to me that you're taking such good care of my mother. And I go, well, of course, I love her. And we hug each other, and I hugged her, and my hands, she didn't have underwear on. I could feel that thing. I didn't mean to touch her, but I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She goes, no, it's okay. And for a second, I looked at her mom there, and I was like, if I push her mom over, then we could get this thing going right here. I went from worshiping, which I do, Cloris Leachman, to thinking about putting a coat over her head so her daughter and I could hook up real quick. That's how my mind, you know, I went from being the most gracious, wonderful guy to, wait a minute, I wonder if we can move your mom. So
At
that
least
happened.
your mind works quickly, right?
It does.
You guys know I'm always on the go and running around with this job, and I've never made a priority of hydrating and putting the right nutrients into my body, and I always find myself hungry. That's why 310 Nutrition for me has been a lifesaver. Their water hydrators are great. You add them to water and they make your water so delicious. They have refreshing, healthy lemonade mixes without sugar, and my personal favorite, they're all-in-one shakes. My favorite's the caramel sundae, but they also have vanilla cake, shamrock cream, chocolate icing. One of these shakes, it totally satisfies my hunger. It cures up my carb craving. It cures my sugar craving. It's low fat and low carbs. And hello, it tastes like dessert. But don't take my word for it. Right now, 310 is celebrating a new year of goals with code VELVETROPE and giving our listeners 50% off, up to $100 off your first order. With so many sample packs, new products, it's really fun and it's easy to put together an order or start a subscription on products you know you'll use. Go to 310nutrition.com and use the code VELVETROPE right now for 50% up to $100 for your first order. That's 310nutrition.com and use code VELVETROPE.
If there's one thing you guys know about me from listening to this podcast, it's that I like options and I like simplicity and I like convenience. And I have to tell you, Talkspace kind of feels like having a therapist in my back pocket. I'm able to reach out to my therapist anytime from anywhere, and that makes taking care of my mental health super easy. I'm more relaxed when I'm traveling. You know, I'm in the Hamptons all summer, so I mean, I'm on the go. And I just love knowing that if I need to talk to my therapist, I can just send a message from wherever I am, and hey, they respond. Also, I gotta tell you, if you're thinking of therapy, you can sign up for Talkspace and you can actually start therapy the exact same day. Like I said, simplicity and results. It's a fraction of the cost of in-person therapy. As a listener of this podcast, you get $100 off your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code VELVET to get $100 off your first month. That's VELVET and Talkspace.com.
It's a relief. You know, if you've been through I went through an especially nasty divorce last time because it involved kids. And I had to go to court and custody court, and I had to do all this stuff. And and anything involves something you, your kids, because that's the thing you love the most. That's a, that, and if they know that and they want to hurt you, they're like, oh, that's the thing I'm going to try and take away from you. I'm going to say, but that feeling with Cloris's daughter was the first time I went, oh, I still, I could still have sex. No, it's still going. There's something, you know, some men, as we know, have that all the time, and they get fucking in trouble. You can't, you can't count on them, because that's right. All they got. They're like fucking living on red. The head of their penis is like the fucking razor's edge. They're just, you know, and it's sex addiction, and you got to find the. But I think having sex is probably a good thing, you know.
Calms you down, right?
Right. You know, but I have to say, don't put down jerking off, because let me tell you something. It's, and I do recommend this to young guys. I guess some of the young guys are like, oh, we got there, I want to fuck her. I say, do yourself a favor, jerk off before you go out, because then you won't get in quite as much trouble. You probably won't get into a fight, and then you don't go for, you know, you pace yourself. You pace yourself a little bit with the partying, with women, with men, whatever. You make a little bit better decisions, because young people make terrible decisions. I know, because I was a young person. So there's that.
So that's your advice for all the young men out there.
Yeah, or men in general, yeah.
Speaking about, you mentioned politics and Jane Fonda. Talk to me about this whole, you know, listen, when you think Tom Arnold, you think a lot of things. You don't think, you know, breaking the story of like Jerry Falwell and the pool boy and Michael Cohen. How does this all come about? I mean, I know you were doing your own like anti-Trump.
Right.
Analysis. Well,
I knew Trump, known Trump for almost 40 years. So, you know, this guy's bad news. Like, you know, he would, you know, I put up a clip. He came on my sports show. First of all, Roseanne and I did a special at Trump Castle. Maybe it was a casino at the end of the 80s. And he was like, listen, I have a friend that has a what is a Bugatti or whatever, some kind of $3 million car. And he will, we'll bring this, and then I'll drive Roseanne onto the set. I'll be her chauffeur. So I'm like, okay, that sounds great. And now I realize he's in the show. Now he's in the show. And then later, I was talking to HBO. We were settling up some bills. They go, the guy that drove that car up lives on a farm in New Jersey. He boxed it up. He drove it up here, and Trump promised to pay him $40,000, and he didn't pay him. And so I thought, well, that's hilarious. I'll pay him. Because that's a hilarious Donald Trump story. But that's really, that's his business, whatever. And he would come on my sports show, and we had young girls in the audience. Like, you know, we'd have a high school or a junior high dressed in uniforms. And he's like, hey, what? And you can see by the show go to me, hey, what's going on with these guys? So there's that. But it was fine when he was just Donald Trump. I've been to the Playboy Mansion with him. He took me after the show to meet his new girlfriend, Karen McDougal. And then I realized, oh shit, his wife is here too, Melania, and his daughter. Like, he has no problem, you know. And so, but I thought that's all fine, you know. Sports show. There's a lot of guys involved with sports or, you know, entertainment that are like that. But then when he started talking about running for office, I was like, oh shit, this is the worst idea ever. And so I did my best. You know, I had friends that worked on The Celebrity Apprentice. And they had tape of, I mean, the thing about The Celebrity Apprentice is it's a game show. And in America, if you host a game show, you have to be mic'd from the time you get out of the car to the time you leave, because there was a game show scandal in the 50s. And people cheated. The sponsors of the show told the person who should win. So the host of the show is mic'd up all the time and filmed. And there's 18 cameras filmed with that show. So then the shit they have when people talk about the outtakes, it's crazy. And the executive producer of that show's brother was my clip producer on the Best Sports Show, period. So I know what they have. You know, people share. And at the time, it's like hilarious. Here's a Christmas tape of me and Donald Trump saying all these racist whatever things, going up to the camera woman, like, in camera, you're fuckable. You're fuckable. You're fuckable. And so we got to get that out there before the Hillary election. And, you know, these guys got so afraid. And by now they were all working for Mark Burnett. I brought him in, hired him. They run Survivor. But they were, you know, they were very nervous too about Donald Trump, the worst human being ever. I got a huge fight at Arnold Schwarzenegger's house on the Christmas 2016, after Trump was elected, Mark Burnett was there. You know, he comes up and he's like, "Hey, man, I'm not going to give you the tape that you want of Trump or Trump. Trump wants them, you want them. I'm not giving them." And then he's like, shows me, he goes, "And I'll tell you why." And he shows me a picture of his son as Trump's ring bearer. I'm like, "Well, that's fucked up." Anyway, some people are there, and they say, and the people I know, you know, Hillary Clinton is more like, you know, Hitler than Donald Trump. I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" You know, people inside all the institutions. I go, "What in the f-?" That is, so I get in a huge fight with people I genuinely like, and it's gonna. I don't know if we're gonna fist fight in Arnold's living room or whatever, but Matt Van Wagenen speaks up and he says, the executive producer, the guy that works with Burnett, who's there, and says, "Wait a minute, Donald Trump is the worst human being I've ever met in my entire life." And everybody, you know, he stepped up and did that. It's Eric Van Wagenen, the brother, and it froze everybody because nobody thought he was going to say that. And then I'm like, "Well, this is my exit strategy. I'm going to get out of here now." And so I walk out Arnold's house, and he's got a very long driveway, and there's a valet, and there'd been a car, the valet had smashed a car down, so it's taking a while to get the cars. And I'm standing there, and I look behind me, it's Clint Eastwood, who's very conservative. I'm like, "Oh, fuck." And he's like, "You know, Tom, Trump is a bonehead." He goes, "You know the worst part about being elected mayor? Then you got to be mayor," which is his reference of he was a mayor. And so I thought that was pretty cool. I still, no matter what, I love Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
So I started, Vice got a hold of me and said, after a little while, "Would you do a show? We like your social media. Would you do a show? We'll give you cameras. You can go wherever you want about Trump. We'll analyze each of these tape things." And that's how I got to know Michael Cohen, obviously. And when I first met Michael Cohen, people were like, I did a selfie with him in June of 2018, because I stayed at the Regency where I knew he was living. And I was getting ready to leave. There's a Rolling Stone reporter following me around, and the crew had already started heading back to LA. And he walks, we're sitting there, me and the reporter having a drink in the front of the downstairs the Regency. And he's like, "It's too bad you didn't run into Michael Cohen." I go, "Yeah, whatever." And then I go, "Oh, fuck, there he is right there. He's coming in the door." So I jump up and get Michael Cohen comes to the door. And I'm like, I don't know how this is going to go. It might go shitty. We might be fucking, and it went very well. He's like, "Oh, Tom, very nice to meet you, I know." And then the reporter took a picture of us, which I posted, and people went crazy. But the right-wing people said, "That's bullshit. He just did a selfie. He doesn't know Michael Cohen." Well, I did know Michael Cohen, and I made a lot of tapes with Michael Cohen, and I supported him in prison. I talked, I had a cell phone with him in prison. I had two cell phones, you know, because he was cooperating. And his cooperation, you will see even more payoff now, because the things that he went to prison for, the evaluating his property higher than it was worth to get loans from the bank, are the same thing that the Trumps did. So what goes around comes around. He's certainly been helpful with documents and stuff. But he got out of prison, and I'd always wondered, there's several things. Like this before he went to prison. I want to know about Jerry Falwell Jr. I was like, something does add up that, you know, Michael had did this thing, because by now I'd gotten to know the pool boy and then other pool boys, and I was putting it together, and I knew that Michael Cohen had fixed the thing for them in 2015, where there was a bunch of pictures that got out of Falwell's, and by the way, people like when he got busted over this, Falwell said, "Oh, it was a boudoir picture that Becky took for me. Let me tell you, Becky had jizz all over her, and it wasn't his jizz." And he is in. People were dying that they wanted Jerry Falwell to get caught doing a homosexual act. That was their whole thing. I hated him because of his anti-LGBTQ and his anti-Muslim and stuff. And the fact that Giancarlo Granda, the legitimate pool attendant who had the 7-year affair, was half Mexican. I mean, yeah. Just a hypocrisy. And you know, it was, but, and all the lies and Oh, we didn't do and Jerry Falwell. So I recorded Michael Cohen. We talked about a lot of things, but that was one of the things. And I waited a little bit until the day he went into prison because I always felt like he kind of likes the Falwells, Michael Cohen. He sounds like a broken hearted because they didn't, you know, he went to their kids. I guess it's called a christening when you're Christian and you have the baby. And he bought them a gift from Chanel. And they haven't called him at all since he got arrested. And so he was broken hearted. So I was like, this relationship could come back on. And it turns out it did. But the day he went into prison, I hooked up with the New York Times and Washington Post and Reuters, the guy from Reuters, and gave him the tapes of him explaining the deal he did to get Trump, to get Falwell to support Trump, and the fact that he still had a picture. Like, well, I got rid of all the pictures of the deal. Oh, I still have one, by the way, and it is terrible. And so I flew to New York immediately to see what all he had. But I said, that changed our politics because Jerry Falwell Jr. was not going to support Donald Trump. And then he did. And because Michael Cohen reminded, remember that deal I fixed with you and your wife and the pool boy? Well, now I'm asking if I still have one of the pictures, by the way, and I'm asking a favor. And so if Jerry Falwell hadn't supported Trump, you know, Jerry Falwell's so full of shit. But then the other evangelicals, that gave them cover to go for Trump, which makes zero sense. But so I got to know Giancarlo Grande, who's a really good dude, man. And he was a dude that's like 20, and he's working out over there at the Fountain Blue. And this couple comes in and they're really working them. Yeah, he wouldn't take much. When I was 20, I'd have been all in. They're like, here's some money, come to the hotel. I'd been like, yeah. And I want you to have sex with my wife. I'm just going to sit in the corner and jerk off. Okay. Yeah, it seemed a little weird, but I'm fucking, give me some drinks. I'm in. And so they developed this 7-year relationship. And you know, Jerry didn't just sit in the corner. I mean, Jerry, all of a sudden Jeremy beside them, and then he worked his way over. And then Giancarlo was brave enough. I got to know him. I mean, his family was under so much pressure because, first of all, his family were Christians. They're like, oh, my God, you're friends with Jerry Falwell at Beckinville? That's like being friends with Jesus. So to turn that around and go, okay, here's the real story. In fact, Jerry's threatening to blackmail me because he has a tape of me having sex with Becky Falwell. He's threatening to send that to my girlfriend. And I have text messages from Jerry threatening him, hey, when you're in prison, don't bend over to pick up the soap. Like threatening this kid. And this guy never asked for money. That's the thing. One of the other pool boys got $1 million settlement for them. But this guy never did. What he wanted was the business they bought together in Miami. The gay youth hostels, I call it. It's a youth hostel, but it's, you know, it's for everybody. There's a lot of sex in it there. And so he wanted to get out of that business deal. He owns 24.9% of that business deal, which is, he wanted to be in real estate. They're like, hey, how would you like, first night they met him, what are your dreams? He goes, well, I think I'd like to be in real estate and be in a position to give back. He goes, the way you give back is you make a lot of money first. We got a deal for you. You're 20 fucking years old. You're like, these guys are multimillion. Yeah. And so he researched, found this property in Miami, who, by the way, Roy Black said it's a good property. My buddy.
That's all we need to know.
I love it. Yeah. He's the best. He has been very helpful to me. Let me tell you something. I don't know.
I told Leo Black that I feel just good in life, that if anything ever happens to me, I'm taken care of. All I got to do is call Roy.
Yeah, my kids and I's life is much easier because of him, I have to tell you. So
that's good.
He gets his property, and then the relationship sours. And, you know, it's one of those weird relationships where they got this, hey, Becky misses you. I don't know if you heard the tapes of him, Jerry, talking to Giancarlo. Becky misses you. I'm getting jealous. She thinks you're dating someone. Like, it's so fucking weird. But Giancarlo has, you know, the goods, the receipts, the whatever. But he just wanted to get out of that business deal at 10% on the dollar. He didn't want the full amount that properties were. He wanted to get out. He wanted to join the army or wanted to do something with his life. And they would not let him do it. And, you know, it ended up costing Jerry Falwell his job. You know, the Michael Cohen tape of him talking about fixing that deal, the fact that Giancarlo was brave enough to come out and, you know, took all the shit because they're like, what is it? This is, we don't care about people's sex lives. Well, it wasn't about people's sex lives, except they're huge hypocrites. And you can't have, if you go to that college, you can't have sex. It's right. The Liberty way. And what has led to is, I'm very proud of Giancarlo. I'm very proud of how he did it, but it led me to the 22 Jane Does at Liberty University who were raped and sexually assaulted and then told by Liberty University, you're in trouble. You just had sex. And, but I was gang raped. No, that's, and so I've gotten to know them and I'm doing a documentary series with them as their trial leads up. But it is such bullshit. You know, it's not about sex. It's about money. It's about power. It's about hating these women. And just the shit they did where they're like, well, you can't go to the police station. You go to the Liberty University police station. One girl was 15 years old. She went to debate summer camp there at Liberty University. She gets raped. She gets sexually assaulted. They take her down to the police station for 15 hours. They don't let her go to the hospital. They have her debate coach come and take pictures of her injuries, of her sexual assault injuries. 15 years old. And the parent, because they're like, well, they're at Liberty University. It's the safest university in America. It's a Christian. It has to be okay. It's not the safest university. They just don't report this shit. And Jerry Falwell is a big part of that because all he wanted was the money and the power. And I'm so grateful to be a part of taking him down. You know, it all goes back to Trump. It all goes back to his enablers. And I look forward to the January 6th committee taking Trump. I look forward to Trump. People are like, he has to go to prison. I go, I just want the truth out. I would like him to go to jail. I think he is going to. But I look forward to the rest of the truth.
You like couldn't make this stuff up if you tried.
No. Because if you think, what's the worst thing? And I did used to be like that. I'd be like, yeah, you get conspiracy on this side, conspiracy is somewhere in the middle. But it's a lot closer to, you know, I mean, you see the people that Trump was involved with and who would still, I mean, I see a whole party in our country going off a cliff right now with Donald Trump. And they've had many opportunities to get away from him. And it's the worst abusive relationship you could have because he's such a bad guy and he turns on everybody. He's so full of shit and he's a loser. He lost every branch of government when the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and these assholes are still like, that's our guy. He's the most like Jesus. So, unfortunately, got to do things the hard way.
Well, speaking of Jesus and the second coming of Jesus, I mean, I remember when Roseanne initially was coming back on the air. I mean, it was the biggest, there was so much media hype around it. There was so much, you know, there was so much fanfare around it. I mean, before the tweets and, you know, the cancellation and then the Connors, but initially, you know, after all those years when they announced that Roseanne was coming back on the air, you know, what was that like for you? Like, were you waiting? Were you waiting for your phone call to come to be a part of this show?
No, I didn't think that. I thought, you know, the one thing I'd done that she asked me to do was her roast a few years ago and it went well. And it was hard to get to that point. You know, this was day one. It was the week of the roast. I get a call. Hey, Roseanne would like you to, she'd like to call you. And I go, well, why don't you tell me what she's going to say? Because then I'll know, you know, because if it's something insulting, it's going to be like, fuck you. No, fuck you. And it'll be over. So the producer of it, well, she wants you to dress up like a waiter and serve her a drink in the middle of it. And then, and I go, yeah. And then, no, that's it. I go, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And people would be so pissed. It's a fucking roast. So then the next day, as we get close to the weekend, okay, here's what she'd like you to call you to ask you if you'll do. If you'll show up and surprise everybody and roast everyone on the dais but her. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not. That's another terrible idea. And I wasn't even sure. And I said, I said a long time before, because when the roast first got announced, somebody called me and said, would you be willing to do it? I go, don't ask me at the last minute because I need to prepare. It has been 18 years since I need to prepare this shit. So then 2 days before the roast, you know, she's called and left some messages and they were nice, but they're like, you can do on a Thursday, you can do anything you want. Just anything you want, just be part of it. Now, Friday, I said, I have to think about it one day. I've talked to my wife at the time, I have to think about it. And you know, she was like, well, if you want to, you know, do it. You should do it. I think you're thinking about it. And then we, on Friday, the roast of Saturday, I called my lawyer and he's like, you have so many restraining orders against each other. You know, if she says something about your penis, she owes you $100,000. If you say something about her vagina, you're in. So they spent all night, Friday night, with the lawyers from Viacom and my lawyers, so that Saturday I could go to the thing. And it was so nerve-wracking. You know, I had 18 jokes came out as though they'd been in the back of my mind. But until I came out on stage, I didn't know for sure I was coming out on stage. And it was a really big surprise. Very few surprises in television. But I could feel people gasp. Even the roastees. It was stunning. And it went well. And I hadn't seen if people hugged her before that, because I wasn't watching what happened before. It's kind of hidden in this room. So I don't know. I get done. I kind of look at her like, okay, I'm going to, it kind of gave her a this. And then I went backstage. And then she stopped the show, came backstage. They said, we want to take a picture of you guys. She said, thanks for doing that. That really meant a lot. And that's a good way to bury the hatchet. And then the photographer runs around, can we take a picture? And she's like, oh, I got to go to the restroom first. And I thought, if she's going to go to the restroom, instead of taking a picture of me, she didn't want to take a picture of me, I'm getting out of here. So I left. And my wife at the time, when I was telling her about it, she's like, well, what do you think? She's not going to take a picture with you until her ex-husband looks in the mirror and sees that she's all together. And I was like, oh, you think that's true? I thought you, no. So, but that to me was the perfect ending. I did it. I wanted to get out of there before it went sideways. And so I heard that the Connors were coming back. I knew Sarah Gilbert was instrumental in that. And that was the first time I found out Roseanne's politics. She was a Donald Trump, because she hated him when we were together, you know. And she was the first feminist I'd ever met. Like, she was so different than everyone in Iowa, the women I grew up with. I grew up with some great women, but, you know, Roseanne was very thoughtful and liberal and I love that about her, you know. So when I hear that the show's coming back and then I hear that she is a Trump fan, it all happened at the same time as my show's coming out, anti-Trump fan. I didn't think I'd be a part of the show. It would be smart if they had me part of the show. Like, it would be smart for them to have me do her roast, you know. I mean, I got paid to do it, and I got a private jet to fly me to Nashville but it would be very smart of them. But I know that her hatred, I just knew it wasn't going to happen. But I did, for the Hollywood Reporter, review the pilot, like thoughtfully reviewed the pilot, and I liked it. You know, obviously I'm attached to the original show. I wrote that. I was on it. It was better in my, but this was very good. This is as good as you could do. And they had some good writers and Whitney Cummings and Wanda Sykes and Bruce Helford is very good. He's from the old days. So I thought this show would be very, very good. But I had a bad feeling right away because she hadn't shut down her social media. And I kind of did a deep dive into her social media, and it was so racist and so conspiracy. So as the show started going on, she started tweeting stuff, and her daughter, Jennifer, reached out to me, my old stepdaughter, and said, hey, what can we do about this? And you know what I would have done about it? If her show would have been on the line, and she always said she wanted to quit the original Roseanne show. I'm quitting today, I'm goddamn it. But I knew that if she ever did, she would be devastated. So I had to, here's the reasons you got to go to work. Here's the, you know, kick my car stereo in, do whatever you want. But this and it became a real chore to get her to go to work. And it became that hurts the relationship too when you're in that kind of a.
Yeah.
But because there was one time when she said, I'm quitting. I go, let's go up to Tom Warner's office And she goes, I don't get respect here. Give me one reason I should stay on this show. And he goes, I will give you 100 million good reasons.
Seriously.
Like, that's fucking real deal. But I knew she started, she wrote a letter to every member of Congress saying John McCain was a war criminal. I mean, that takes a lot of effort. And the Boston bomber was a false flag thing. And so, you know, her daughter, her kids were getting very concerned. And here's what I would have, and I suggest this a couple times. I said a picture of a phone that goes to a different server before it goes up. If someone wants to tweet some, I said, tell her Donald Trump doesn't do his own tweets. Tell her, or throw her fucking phone in the river. Like I would, there would have been no Wi-Fi if I was, and it was a lot of work being that guy, but I would have shut it the fuck down until the show was done. You know, there's a lot of ways to do a lot of things. And sometimes you have to protect people from themselves. But what happened with the show is the first season finished and people were like, are you going to be as political pro-Trump next year? And so she told all the Trump people, yeah, I am. The QAnon people that she's fucking following and friends with the all solid QAnon, crazy, you know. And then she told the other people, no, we're not going to be as political. So the weekend before the writers were to come back on a Tuesday, I was like, this is going to be a bad weekend for her. Because, you know, she's self-destructive. And she really didn't want to come back. And by the way, the original show got canceled. The original show, John Goodman was not even on it the last season. So you have to remember, things run out. Seinfeld, every show has a run. And I worked on it the first 6 years, and it was good. But, you know, 6 years is a long time to be good. And 9 years is kind of impossible. But, you know, that weekend, she started with something about a donkey and Chelsea Clinton's face. And I got a hold of her daughter. I go, she better fucking apologize for that right now. She can go at Hillary Clinton. But going at somebody's daughter, a woman with three daughters, I go, you got to get her. She's got to get her shit together. And then by Sunday, she did the very racist thing. But if you see everything leading up to it, and I'm proud that Disney immediately, Bob Iger, who did it, who just, I think, retired. Bob Iger used to come over to our house and stand at the bottom of her bed to get her to go to work. And, you know, sometimes she had a facelift, sometimes. But that's how he started his career.
Wow.
You know. And he's a really good man. He is a solid, good human being. And he ran Disney and he just said, we're not doing this. And, you know, my thing at the time was every little black kid has heard this monkey bullshit growing up. You know, I'm Jewish. I've heard, you know, and you know how fucking mean kids are. And I didn't have a mother. So you mentioned shit. But I'm telling you, for an adult, a multi-millionaire white Jewish woman to fucking perpetuate that is unacceptable. Some of the people look to on TV, like, that's America's mom, or, you know, that's why Dean Cain is on my shit list, because he was like Superman, and now he's one of those assholes, you know. But that's really what happened, and they had to. I can't imagine how hard it would have been the next season to be a writer on that show or a producer, because every week, because she was feeding into the negativity like Trump does, feeding into it. And Trump was talking about her. But he'll tell you what, he fucking dumped her the second the show got canceled.
Well, that's nice of you to even like reach out and or, you know, try to work with her daughter and try to step in and help and like take away her social media. I mean, that's, you didn't have to do that. That's nice of you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice. Well, they reached out to me first and I thought, what? You know, and then I researched it because I had my guys from Vice and we kind of download, you know, I got into some emails and got into research and I had to threaten some of the guys. She was these leaders of this, like, I'm going to, you know, we're going to shut the lights off in your house. If you need to stay the fuck away from her. Maybe one day they'll all come out where all of a sudden we drop in the middle of their email conversations. And I'm like, what are you fucking in love with her? You know, I went every which way to get these fucking people to stop, to her to stop. And I thought if you isolate her enough, maybe she'll come to her, get her wits about her. You know, maybe she needs a mental health week or something. That would certainly be, you know, but you have to get off of this shit. But, and you know, her boyfriend, very nice guy from all I've told, but he's not a guy that will throw her phone in the fucking river. And sometimes you shouldn't need that, but sometimes you may at least give the person a chance to be their best self.
Right.
And if they're going to make a decision, a bad decision, at least be your best self when you're making that decision. So there you go.
And you heard from them before the tweet, like, or was it because of the tweet? Or, like, do you hear from them just even when the show came back?
Whole, as soon as the season started.
Oh, wow.
And she was tweeting shitty stuff anyway, before that tweet.
Right.
And so I just sensed, oh, this is going to go. And I said to Jen, this weekend is going to be a rough weekend because this is the last weekend before the show comes back on Tuesday. All those writers are coming back. And she told half of them, we're all Trump. And then the other half, we're not Trump. And she told all these fans and that pressure, you know, she's going to do something really fucking stupid this weekend. So she did.
And you feel total closure, you know, you talk about the roast and you were going to take this picture and then she said, I'll be right back. And she went in the bathroom, like, you know, and your wife said, well, didn't, you know, she went in the bathroom to fix herself up. She wasn't like trying to avoid you or running away from you, you know, even though you left, you know, and you never really kind of found out. I mean, you guys could have talked, had a conversation, like, you know, do you ever wonder what if, or I mean, do you still feel closure with Roseanne?
I felt bad about that. Yeah. It made me happy that she wasn't blowing me off. And I'm like, well, if I see her again, we'll, you know, but I did see her again. And the next time I really heard from her, people liked the roast a lot. People are touched by it. But the next I heard from her was this Trump shit in 2016. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So, and then the show coming on, and of course I would have gone on the show. And of course we could have done something like we did with the roast. And of course I would have, my character could have come back to the show, and it still could. But, you know, I'm in a no man's zone. And one thing she did, though, that ABC allowed her to do is, as I was promoting my show and I had a comedy special out, she said, Tom can't be on Good Morning America. Can't be on any, just randomly. And they honored that. If you want me to promote this show, I will. But here's the condition. Tom Arnold can't be promoting, you know, whatever he wants to promote. And they did. It's shitty, but they did honor that. But that's part of the business, you know. That's how shit goes. So I don't care. But to have that resentment, you know, I also think that when life's shitty, that you always want to blame somebody. You blame someone. Oh, how can I be in this marriage? Oh, it's all him. He's a Svengali. He's a master manipulator. But then the next time you get a divorce, you got to blame that guy. And you had to blame the guy before me, which, you know, and then who are you going to blame after that? And then who, you know, so, you know, I mean, it was one of my four marriages. And
I mean, it is how the business works, but still, that's a pretty strong ban all these years later, you know, to say, I don't want Tom on any, you know, GMA, Kelly and Ryan, like any of the ABC morning shows. That's kind of a pretty strong ban.
Right.
That had nothing to do with your show. It just had to do with life.
And by the way, I did not want to talk about her show going off the air, but I was promoting my new comedy stand-up special. And the show went off the air right then. And so any interview I did, the first thing they asked about was that. And people were like, why do you keep talking about Roseanne? I'm just like, but I did think it was important as a voice, as we are, voices in this country, to call out overt racism. You know, because that's what it was. And people aren't that don't pussyfoot around it as much 4 years later now. But they certainly were then. Boy, how do you call someone racist? How do you call someone a white supremacist? Why do you do this? Well, because they are.
The world has
it's
come.
A big thing in this country. Anti-Semitism, anti-LGBTQ, anti-immigrant, and anti-people of color, man. It fucking is there. And I'll tell you this, and I know this as a Jew, you better stand up with each other because they're fucking going after us next.
I'm Jewish too, so trust me, I know.
You have a star David on your...
No. You don't even want to know. I have this. I have a barcode tattoo. Yeah. So this like made my grandparents very happy, yes. I'm being sarcastic. But you also have two movies coming out, right? You were just in Italy filming. You have two movies coming out?
I did. I did two movies in Rome. I've done four movies in Rome this year, wow. You know, because COVID. I did one in the UK. The one in the UK is... called The Abomination. I play Dr. Frankenstein. It's a modern day Frankenstein with a really cool director and a really cool cast. And I'm excited about that. Then I did two holiday movies in Rome, which I'm so grateful to work, you know. And I've done four over there in the last year, and with a great crew and a great fun director. And Billy Baldwin did the last three with me, and Michael Madsen did the first one. And then he couldn't fly for the next one because his ex-wife garnished his passport, which sounds like something that would happen to me. And I love Michael Madsen. I love Billy Baldwin. And so, yeah, there's and the Cloris Leachman one, High Holiday, came out last month with Jennifer Tilly, and what a great cast. And there was the Madsen and I one came out, but there's always something. I did a movie with Machine Gun Kelly this summer, which is very fun. And you know, I need to keep working. Again, I have four ex-wives. People are like, do you worry about getting old? I can't wait till the day I turn 65, because then I don't have to pay alimony anymore. That's I'm going to be so – I'll be able to buy a house. You know, my kids are – it's a little over 2 years away, but I'm looking forward to that day.
And yet you're still open to be married again. So that shows you have such a positive attitude.
Well, I'm open to, you know, the possibility. You know,
can't we get Leah Black on this? I mean, she hooked me up with you. Like, I was going to say, Leah's the one to make this happen here.
Yeah. Well, I the kisses I've had over the last few years have been at her house for New Year's Eve, like for real. And they're like with a reality star from the Ocean, OC.
Who?
There was this girl. well, Kelly Dodd was one. And then there was a really nice. And Kelly Dodd's a lunatic, but she's very cute. And you know, there's always somebody there. You know, they don't have to be a reality star. They could be, you know, there's some nice, very pretty, nice people.
Yes, well, Kelly Dodd was just on my show with her husband, Rick. And yeah, so they certainly do create quite a, listen, people love to hate Kelly Dodd, right? So there you go.
No, I just say... You know, I'm very pro vaccination, I have to say. But, you know, she's a character, man. She goes after people, and bless her. Bless her heart. She's very beautiful. And I wish, you know.
How was Kelly Dodd as a kisser?
Very good. Very good. You know, it was at 12 midnight. And I was very grateful. And my kids are grateful because I posted it. And my kids were so happy that I got to kiss. My daughter, who's six, had never seen a woman kiss me. And so, you know, I kiss her a lot. But it was like, you know, they're not like, yeah, get that woman to move in here. I'm sure they would love her because she's sort of the same age. But they're like, oh, dad's, I can't. And I had a long time before I went out. This is really important. Your dad has to get out there again. Because I'm, you know, with these guys all the time, like all the time. And I said, you know, I'm going to go to a party tonight. I'm going to kiss a woman. I don't know who's going to be, but I just need to. And, you know, it was very important to me. I've always have a soft spot for that.
There. And it was just a kiss with Kelly, nothing else?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if this was before Rick, if it worked out, you could have been on the Orange County Housewives.
No, I mean, I like watching that show. I'm old school with that show. That was the first one of the Housewives I've ever watched. But, you know, I like the Miami ones too. The ones that leave. There's some crazy, but the best Housewives are the Atlanta. Because those are, people that know me go, oh yeah, I can see you. That's who, those, yeah, I can see you. Hook it up with those guys.
Do you have a favorite out of the Atlanta Housewives?
Candy.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's very good. And I tried to do a show. We tried to do a talk show with, what's her name? She's the most famous one.
NeNe Leakes.
Yeah. And I met with her and we were going to, and then she insulted the Wendy Williams purse on a tweet and they pulled the show. It was going to be with the people that do the Wendy Williams show. And I didn't even know what that meant. I read the tweet like, what is he talking about? But she talked about her purse. And so I got a call from the studio. They're like, it's a big deal when you sold a black woman's purse. They go, is it? What's the, I don't know. Well, if it is, so she's out. So that never happened.
Okay, wait, and then I'll let you go. You're dropping all these bombs at the end. So wait, so you were going to do a talk show with, like, you were going to produce it and NeNe was going to be, like, the host.
The people that produced the Wendy Williams show were going to produce a show with that NeNe Leakes and I hosted.
what was it going to be about? Just like a talk show, like Wendy Williams? Just us.
Talk show. Yeah. Lifestyle, that kind of stuff. And then right before we were going to shoot, that she tweeted something about Wendy Williams' purse. I swear. And then, you know, Wendy Williams is very powerful in that company. And Wendy Williams is like, if they're coming, I'm leaving if they're coming. And so, and the tweet to me seemed innocuous. It was, I just didn't know it was possible to insult somebody's purse and offend them so severely, but it was. And the white executive producer called me and goes, you have no idea. Like, you do not insult a black woman's purse. I go, well, I would never do that, but I'm learning a lot here. This seems like it would have been a good segment on the show. And, but I like that Needy. She's, I like that the Atlanta Housewives are just the best.
They're good. And if Wendy Williams calls and says it's them or me, I think they're going to go with Wendy Williams.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, listen, Tom, the next time you come back, you can promote all your movies. We won't have to talk about anything from the past. Everyone needs to follow you online. I really appreciate your time. Thank you. Leah is everything. And thank you for doing this.
All right, brother. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to yet another episode of Behind the Velvet Rope. Because without you listeners, I would just be a crazy person with voices in my head. And if you like what you hear, subscribe on Apple Podcasts under Behind the Velvet Rope. And when you're done subscribing, feel free to leave a 5-star write-up review, because the write-up reviews actually count. We read each and every one of them. We post the best ones, and the reviews really help our shows keep going. And we really appreciate everything you guys say, especially the positive ones. And if you want to find us online, we're at Behind Velvet Rope on Instagram. We are at David Yontef on Instagram. We're Behind the Velvet Rope on Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to Patreon, because you know what? There are just some things we can't talk about here. So for our bonus episodes, go to Patreon and type in Behind the Velvet Rope. And if you still aren't sick of me and you want more David, go to Cameo and book me on Cameo. And you can ask me anything there. I'll answer whatever you want. And I have a bargain basement price of $10. Thank you guys. See you soon.